Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Hannah Pagel. Our guest this week is former Minnesota Democrat Colin Peterson, who joins us to talk about the political atmosphere around the upcoming Farm Bill. But first, here's this week's headlines. Grocery prices rose 0.3% last month. The latest consumer price index showed beef prices increased about 2.4% in July, which offset the drop in poultry and egg costs. The overall CPI was up 3.2% in July, the first monthly increase in the last year. USDA data shows cropland values rose by more than 8% this year. According to USDA's annual survey of agricultural land values, prices averaged nearly $5,500 an acre. Several states, including Nebraska, Kansas, and New Jersey, saw double-digit increases. The most expensive ag farmland is on the East Coast. Rhode Island is the most expensive at $18,300 per acre, followed by New Jersey, Massachusetts, and Connecticut. And finally, House Ag Committee Democrats are warning House Speaker Kevin McCarthy that any more Republican attempts to change SNAP eligibility could jeopardize the passage of a farm bill. A letter to McCarthy, led by House Ag Ranking Member David Scott, asked McCarthy to support the bill that comes out of the committee. Democrats say the threat of making additional changes to SNAP eligibility or benefits undermines Chairman Glenn Thompson as he tries to get a bipartisan bill out of the committee. Speaker McCarthy and President Biden's debt ceiling agreement raised the age for SNAP work requirements to 54, but added exemptions for the homeless, veterans, and young adults out of the foster care system. Former Minnesota Democrat Colin Peterson has worked on multiple farm bills with tight timeframes as lawmakers work through the politics. As lawmakers come back from the August recess, we asked him, what does a timeline look like to get a farm bill passed this year?
I can tell you it's not going to get done by September 30th. And frankly, that's not a big deal because a good part of the farm bill is mandatory spending, which is not affected by the appropriation bill. It's not affected by the lack of a reauthorization. Right now they're working on non-controversial stuff. So the staffs are working in the House and the Senate with the Republicans working with the Democrats. They haven't gotten to doing it across the chambers yet. So they're working on that. And GT is talking about having some kind of a marker bill in September. We'll see what happens there, but so far they're getting along well. They seem to be friendly and working together, and the staff seem to be working together, so everything is moving along. It does not become problematic until December, so the department will be able to handle it, whatever they end up doing. And if it doesn't get done in December, then it may be a bigger problem.
So let's take a look at the House side. This week, the House Democrats sent a letter to Speaker McCarthy warning him about GOP efforts to restrict the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, and that by doing so, it will jeopardize the passage of a farm bill. Do you think the Democrats have the leverage to hold up a farm bill if they do not see the changes that they want to in the nutrition title?
Well, the Democrats aren't looking for changes. The Democrats are looking for keeping the program intact the way it is. So that's what they're concerned about, is these kind of right-wing people that want to further restrict access to SNAP. In the debt ceiling deal, they made some significant changes in the ABODs, things that they've been working on for years. Most of the sensible Republicans have said, we got that done, let's just move on. But you got some of these right wingers that want to do more. And all I would say to people is you have to just look at the last two farm bills. They both failed on the floor of the House over this issue. And if they're not careful, they'll have another failure if they try to make these kind of changes. Now, these people that are demanding the changes, in my opinion, are never going to vote for a farm bill anyway. So my advice to them is just ignore those guys. And work with some Democrats that you can work with to try to get this thing done on a bipartisan basis.
So let's talk a little bit more about debate on the House floor. You know, G.T. Thompson has mentioned that any farm bill that comes out of committee will be bipartisan. But how confident are you that a bipartisan bill will be able to survive a debate on the House floor, given the amendments that could be coming from both the left and the right?
Well, I think if they have a good significant amount of Democrats that they've worked with and they've got a consensus, I think they'll be able to hold it. You know, the problem they'll have is more of a problem from the right than it is from the left, in my opinion, because the left doesn't have any leverage. But, you know, there's 40, 50 Democrats, maybe more than that, that they can work with that want to get a farm bill done. Same thing over in the Senate, you know, they've got the same situation and they just have to listen to those folks, work with those folks.
We'll be right back with more from Peterson right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Welcome back. Former House Ag Committee Chair Colin Peterson says an effort to pursue a mandatory base acre update will bring back familiar farm bill fights.
This has been an issue that's come up every farm bill that I've been involved in. And it comes up about this time and then it's generally rejected. You know, the last time we did this, I think we had a voluntary update, I believe. And if anything's going to get done within this update area, it's going to be a voluntary. I don't think there's any way that a mandatory update is going to survive. It's going to create too many conflicts. They already have enough trouble the way it is without bringing this trouble on. The other issue with this is, and I talked to Boozman last Monday, and I think he's kind of, you know, looking at this as well. You know, the problem is, if it ends up being a voluntary update, how much does it cost? And if it costs significant money, where are they going to come up with the money? And that's the biggest issue with this whole farm bill is you've got people out there thinking they're going to get extra money. You got all these groups asking for things that cost money. And I don't know, I don't see where the money's going to come from, frankly. It isn't going to cause more trouble than it solves. And I think Senator Stabenow has the same viewpoint, and so we'll just have to see where that goes.
So from your experience, you know, once lawmakers come back from the August recess, they have a few short working weeks before it's the end of the year. What's the appetite to get a farm bill done this year? Because once next year comes around, you know, it's a pre-election year. So what's the appetite to get a farm bill done this year?
Well, I think the appetite that I hear from all of the leaders of the committee, I hear from the leaders in Congress, McCarthy, Jeffries, Schumer, McConnell, that they all want to get a farm bill done. The question is, can they keep some of these extreme elements out of this thing that's going to put a poison pill into the situation where they can't get a bipartisan thing worked out? You could have a situation where if we do end up with a shutdown, and you know, all kinds of drama or whatever, you could have a situation where that, you know, they get something worked out in the Ag Committee that can be bipartisan and across the chambers, then maybe they could put that into some kind of final solution that's going to fund the government.
So to wrap up our conversation here, I have a fun question for you. In 30 seconds or less, what advice do you have for the lawmakers who are drafting the next farm bill?
Listen, instead of talking, okay? That's how I accomplished what I did when I was in Congress, because I would listen, truly listen to the other side. Try to understand where they're coming from and why. And then try to figure out, is there a way that we can accommodate whatever they want with whatever I want and so forth. And so that's the most important thing, in my opinion, is for people to actually listen and then try to figure out, is there a pathway to common ground? That's the way to get this done.
Well, Mr. Peterson, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yep, glad to be here. Thank you.
We'll be right back with this week's panel. But first, our Jana Roche Slice shows us the cost of fertilizer inputs in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
Major fertilizer prices have been dropping over the past year, but some manufacturers see an increase in demand from farmers. According to a report by ag economists at the Universities of Illinois and Ohio State, fertilizer prices were at their peak in 2022. Prices began to drop due to uncertainties from the Russia-Ukraine war, as well as lower prices for corn and natural gas. This chart shows the average cost per ton of three different types of fertilizer in Illinois from July of 2020 to last month. Data from the report shows that prices for all three are declining. Anhydrous ammonia fell to $870 per ton, potash prices were $558 per ton, and the cost for diammonium phosphate has fallen by about 20% over the past year. Manufacturers like Nutrien and Mosaic say farmers in the U.S., Brazil, and India are coming back to the market, which is increasing demand and could raise prices throughout the rest of the year. Economists believe now may be a good time for farmers to begin pricing at least a portion of their fertilizer needs for next year. For AgriPulse, I'm Jana Rochleis.
Who's the number one protein source in chicken feed? You are. Who just increased sales to Egypt by 700%? You did. Who made a huge deal with Goodyear? You again. Take a victory lap. When you pool your resources through your soy checkoff, you're making sales. You're making breakthroughs that all come back to your bottom line. That's you. That's who. As your soy checkoff. Moving soy forward. Moving you forward.
It's not as simple just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers. Excited to get into our panel discussion today, where we'll be looking at what's to come in the upcoming Farm Bill after the August recess, joined by Tara Smith with the Tory Advisory Group and Ferd Hefner, a farm policy consultant. And Tara, my first question's to you. You know, I'm just going to start right off by asking you the hard question. You know, we're in August recess right now. Back in July, the House had a hard time passing, or they'd never even passed a House appropriations or House Ag appropriations bill. You know, the Farm Bill expires at the end of September, and there's not that many working days left towards the end of the year. So, golden question, when are we going to see a Farm Bill?
Not by September 30th. So I'll take the easy out and start by putting that out there. I think there's still some hope that folks might be able to come together and get something done before the end of the year. But even that could be a challenge. And I think realistically, we've already heard leadership start to talk about things like an extension that might need to be done in December in order to get us hopefully just into those first couple of months of 2024 before we're able to get an actual bill across the finish line. But I do think, you know, leadership right now is doing the smart thing, and they're meeting with different factions within the GOP conference. They're having those conversations that they need to have to find out what folks want to help smooth the path as we get to a floor.
And Ferd, I'm going to kind of ask the same question. Do you see this farm bill getting passed, you know, this year, or do you think it's going to get pushed into next?
Yeah, it's hard to know at this point. I think if one or both, if floor action happens in one or both houses by the end of the year, I think that would be a real sign of progress at this point and be a precursor to being able to approve a bill, you know, by early spring of 2024. You know, miracles could happen. It could move faster than that, but I think that's probably about where we're at. And so much hinges on whether the House can function at all. The ag appropriations debacle that you already referenced is makes everybody worried that if you can't even pass a year-long appropriations bill on one of the easier appropriations bills to normally pass, it doesn't bode well.
And I want to talk about if a farm bill could be defeated on the House floor. So this week, you know, House Democrats sent a letter to Speaker McCarthy warning him about GOP efforts to restrict the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program could jeopardize the passage of a farm bill. You know, do the Democrats have the leverage to hold up a farm bill if they do not see the changes that they would like to in the nutrition title, or could it get defeated on the House floor if those changes are not made?
That's definitely always a possibility. We've gone through the last two farm bill cycles where bills had to be defeated on the House floor before they were passed. You know, hopefully lesson learned, hopefully wiser minds prevail and they develop a more bipartisan approach. But if they don't, and I would say not only SNAP, but Inflation Reduction Act conservation money, if there's a tax on those, I think the chances of a bipartisan bill go down, the chances of a defeat on the House floor go up. But, you know, time will tell.
We'll be right back with more from our panel right after this.
Did you know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time? Take us wherever you go. Subscribe at agripulse.com or on Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next farm bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this farm bill coverage.
Welcome back. Our panel discussion continues with Tory Advisory Group's Tara Smith discussing how she thinks Congress will address the farm safety net in the Farm Bill.
I mean, this has always been a partnership, right, between the hunger and the nutrition communities and the farm community to get a final package across the finish line, no matter how ugly everything in between might be. And so I think making sure that the farm piece of this is taken care of is going to be extremely important, whatever that might look like. You know, you've got a lot of folks advocating for increased reference prices. You've got some folks who are wanting to see improvements to crop insurance. There are a lot of different proposals out there. And so there's going to have to be a lot of work to be done to figure out, again, what's ultimately going to garner the votes needed to get a package across the finish line.
So you brought up crop insurance. You know, crop insurance now covers millions of more acres than what it used to, which means that there are more lawmakers that crop insurance falls underneath their jurisdiction, and they probably should be supporting this since it covers more area. But how worried are you that there could be cuts to the crop insurance part of the farm bill?
I mean, I feel 100% confident that we will see folks attack the crop insurance program during this process. It's happened the last two farm bills. We're prepared for it again this farm bill. The attacks tend to come in the same couple of buckets. Folks tend to, you know, go after the premium discount or go after companies and private sector delivery. So it's all pretty consistent. So I think we're prepared. to have to fight those fights. But I think one of the things that folks need to think about as we head into this farm bill, really two things. You know, some of the folks that are making these really extreme proposals to make dramatic cuts or dramatic changes to crop insurance are these folks who are going to vote for the farm bill anyway. And I think in some instances, the answer to that is no. So is it wise counsel to follow the lead of folks who aren't going to vote for the bill anyway? And I think the other thing is to think about, and you have to think about this with every policy that we look at in a farm bill, is including this policy going to bring votes to the table, or is it going to detract votes? And I think at the end of the day, just the popularity of crop insurance, how important it is to farmers, how high of a priority it is for farm groups, means that ultimately, dramatic changes, big cuts to crop insurance are going to equal fewer votes for a final package on the floor.
And Ferd, wrapping up our conversation with you, what changes do you think need to be made in the upcoming farm bill that will support small and beginning farmers?
There's a lot of very interesting proposals out there on credit programs, on even on crop insurance programs, the recent Whole Farm Revenue Protection Bill that got introduced, amongst others. So I think, you know, that there'll be issues around that. I think there'll be issues around socially disadvantaged or minority farmers that come to the fore. I think we'll probably see building upon the urban ag provisions from the last farm bill that, you know, granted, they'll probably be around the edges because there's not massive new amounts of money to put into them. But I think progress can be made. I'm also, you know, relatively optimistic that there will be some increases in funding for agricultural research. So I'm moderately optimistic if we get a bill that we could get a fairly decent bill. I think the bigger question is, do we get a bill and when does it happen?
Well, there's a lot to keep our eye on as lawmakers come back from the August recess. Tara Ferd, thank you so much for joining us today. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse newsmakers. But first, Janaro Schleiss answers a rice farmer's concern on trade with India in this week's From the Field.
This week, we hear from Texas rice farmer L.G. Ron, who is curious about how India's recent ban on non-basmati rice exports will impact world hunger.
India recently imposed a ban on non-basmati rice exports. This is critical for those around the world who are food insecure, particularly when the situation already tenuous for many. How much of an impact will this ban have on those who really, truly are in need? And how can U.S. farmers help?
Thanks for your question, LG. The decision is already raising global prices and forcing countries that rely heavily on imports to try and find supplies. According to analysis from the International Food Policy Research Institute, 42 countries get more than half of their total rice imports from India. Importing that much rice from other exporters like Vietnam and Thailand could end up being a major challenge for struggling countries. The overall severity of the ban will depend on how strictly India enforces it and whether other exporting countries decide to do the same thing India did. If you'd like to see your question answered on the show, send an email to newsmakers@agripulse.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Jana Roschleiss.
Who's the number one protein source in chicken feed? You are. Who just increased sales to Egypt by 700%? You did. Who made a huge deal with Goodyear? You again. Take a victory lap. When you pool your resources through your soy checkoff, you're making sales. You're making breakthroughs that all come back to your bottom line. That's you. That's who. As your soy checkoff. Moving soy forward. Moving you forward.
Looking closer. Seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, we want to recognize our intern, Jana Rose Schleiss, as this is her last week with us. And Jana Rose, we hope you've had a great experience this summer, and we thank you so much for being a part of our team.
Thank you, Hannah, and thank you, AgriPulse. I have had an amazing time reporting this summer in Washington, D.C., and learning about and covering all things agriculture. I loved it.
Well, we wish you the best of luck with your next adventure. And for you all, you can join us next week at this same time. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Hannah Pagel.
And I'm Jana Rose Schleiss.
Take care of yourself.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit agripulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.